Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the city council meeting for the city of Cedar Hills. Today is Tuesday, November the 1st, 2016. Currently have 7:06 PM. Like to call our meeting to order. First item of business is to have invocation, which will be given by the mayor tonight, and the pledge will be led by Councilmember Agueda. So we'll proceed at that point.
Our Father, which art in heaven, we're grateful for this day and for many blessings we have in our lives. We're grateful for this wonderful country in which we live and the freedoms and liberties that are afforded us. We're grateful for those who fight and provide for those freedoms and liberties as well. We're grateful for this city and the opportunity we have to serve the residents of Cedar Hill and pray that we may be able to do that in a manner pleasing unto thee and do thy the work that we have before us in an honest, transparent, and ethical way always. Also bless the Cubbies tonight. We say this in the name of thy son, Jesus Christ, amen. Amen.
Okay. Mr. Geddes.
Oh. Audience and everybody, please rise. Thanks. Repeat after me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. First item I need to take care of is the approval of tonight's agenda. If someone will make a motion on that, please.
I move that we approve the agenda as is.
Okay, a motion to approve the agenda as is. Is there a second?
I will second that.
Mr. Sapala seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Moving on to public comments. Is there anyone here that has wanted to speak in public comments? No names were on the list. There's not anyone. I will close that part of the meeting. Next item is the consent agenda. We have two items in the consent agenda. One is the appointment of Robin Finch to the Beautification, Recreation, Parks and Trails Committee. The other is two meetings. They're both council meetings, one for September the 20th, 2016, and October the 18th, 2016. I'll take a motion on the consent agenda now.
I move that we approve the consent agenda.
Okay. I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Bailey seconded it. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Let's move on to city business. Mr. Bunker, you're first, and then we'll go to your right.
Great. Mayor and Council, I just want to give you an update. The contractor is working on the driving range fence now. They actually got started today. They've had a little bit of issue with some wet grass. Their machines can't be out there when it's real slick, and so they've been a little bit slow, but they are working on that. Hopefully we have new netting by the first of next week unless we have more weather issues. The grill will start their winter hours. They will be Sunday and Monday, they're going to be closed. As we shut down the golf course and play winds down, they're just not busy at the grill. So it's really hard for them to stay open when there's nobody coming. Tuesday through Friday, 10 to 2, and then 4 to 7, and then Saturdays, 10 to 7. So those hours will be posted on the city's website as well. And Greg, if we could get those hours clearly shown on the door, so people know exactly when those hours are. Thank you. The ski bus is full, so if you wanted to jump on the bus, that bus is not got room anymore. Unless, Greg, can we do two buses? Can we add another bus if there's enough interest?
Tough one. Okay.
Great. All right. Be looking for that, Council. I did want to update the City Council on a topic that we've discussed down at the Timpanogos Special Service District. We had Walt Baker come from the Division of Environmental Quality come down and speak with the board down there. What the state is looking at is the setting limits, discharge limits at the plant for phosphorus and nitrogen. Now, this may not seem like a very big deal, but it could have high dollar ramifications to every resident in our district. Right now, the EPA does not regulate nitrogen and phosphorus. They are not considered contaminants. and so the EPA doesn't regulate them. But the state is looking at the total maximum daily load, TMDL, for Utah Lake, and they want to back into some limits for phosphorus and nitrogen based on the TMDL. So what's happening in the lake? It's a very shallow lake. We had the algal bloom this summer, and what was interesting is we had it on Utah Lake, but we also had it on Schofield, and we also had it at Payson Lakes. Now, as you know, Payson Lakes and Schofield have zero wastewater treatment plants that discharge into those lakes. None. So why did they have an algal bloom and Utah Lake did as well? I would propose that it's not strictly just the sewer plants discharging into Utah Lake that helped accelerate that. There's other issues. Temperatures went up. Also, the lake levels were low at Utah Lake this year. A lot of the irrigation companies were holding back their water up into Deer Creek this last summer. So, but regardless, there are issues, and the state is trying to get to some kind of a basis for why those things are happening, and they are definitely have their eye on sewer plants who discharge into Utah Lake. The sewer plant, TSSD, is part of another group of concerned advocacy groups with the lake. So Provo City, they are very concerned about these limits that might come down the pipe. Their plant would not be able to even get to one part per million in phosphorus. TSSD, we're about at one part per million in phosphorus. Walt Baker, in his presentation, was talking 0.01 parts per million phosphorus. In order for TSSD to get to those levels, we would have to change our processes down there. It would cost millions of dollars to do. Provo would have to redo their plant completely. They can't even get to one part per million. So I'm just wanting to let you know that these things are being discussed. They're being banded around. They're trying to get input on this. The sewer district is trying to stay up on this, and as we get more information, we'll definitely bring it back to the cities. But there's an effort to work with the state to get a reasonable discharge limit, not something that's unattainable without changing our plant process down there. So just want to let you guys know that that's happening.
Okay, thank you.
If you have any questions, just give me a call and we can go through some of the details there.
Mr. Cipolla.
We had a Lone Peak Public Safety meeting this past week. A couple of things happened there. One is we have approved a contract with Heart of the Matter to study some metrics for the fire department so we can get a better handle on how to measure performance there. We also approved the hiring of an emergency preparedness coordinator for the district who will help us put in place a communications plan and a command and control structure for how to respond to disasters in the future. Those are the two main things that happened at that meeting. Separately, I've been working on State of the City. It's going to be delayed compared to when you normally see it. But expect to see some drafts coming out within the next week or two.
Anything else?
That's it.
Okay. Mr. Geddes.
The only thing I have to report is I did stop by the brand new building of the Utah Dispatch. It's pretty cool. They're putting in the facilities and they're scheduled to open in the next week, I think.
Okay. I need to report back on from our last meeting when you guys gave some direction on Canyon Road. And so that night, even though Mr. Geddes and Mr. Cipolla said at some point the city should own the road, the council as a body, I think, was unanimous and adamant that that the county take their road, fix their road, take the $9.5 million approximately, and use that money and fix it. I think that's accurate. And then come back and talk to us. And also there was an interest in terms of sitting down with Pleasant Grove and see if we can get our minds together. So I spoke with Councilmember Graves, who has transportation in his portfolio next year, He is opposed to the county taking the $9.5 million and fixing the road. Says it would be at a standard higher than what the county is prepared to maintain. Commissioner Lee, while he's saying that he completely agreed with the proposal that the county makes, he says that he is open to fixing the road and coming back and talking to us. Nathan Ivey, who's not a commissioner, but most likely will be, then he said he was open to fixing the road and coming back and talking to us as well. So, but Pleasant Grove, their city manager talked with ours, and David let me know that they may not be interested in sitting down with us. And reason for that is that they are in the process of trying to make a deal with the county in order to take their portion of the money, fix the road in Pleasant Grove, and work a deal out with the county, with or without us. So they may not be interested in sitting down. So that's it.
Hey, Gary, can I just ask a clarifying question? When Commissioner Graves said that he is worried this would be at a standard higher than what the county is prepared to maintain, does that mean curb and gutter? Is that what they mean by higher standard?
What that means is the condition that the current road is the condition that he envisions it always being.
Meaning we have county roads with potholes and that's just a normal thing?
No, what he's saying is that if you add curb and gutter, that's a higher standard.
Okay, so it is the curb and gutter.
But
in Pleasant Grove, they have curb and gutter nearly the whole area in Pleasant Grove.
So
they're already maintaining that. I don't understand how this would raise
that's up
the standard.
Well, that's up to Pleasant Grove and the county in terms of exactly what they're going to do. Because it sounds like they're going to take their portion of the money, and maybe Pleasant Grove is putting in some of their own money in order to fix it. So
okay.
Obviously we're not privy to those discussions. But there's one sitting commissioner, one potentially sitting commissioner, who are open to the idea of sitting down at the beginning of the year and discussing things. But I'm not sure that Pleasant Grove City Council is interested in sitting down with us. They don't see a point.
I understand that. It's just nice if we're having a discussion with the county or anybody on a matter to just get the easily verified facts on the table. And so when they say something like standard shouldn't be raised, that's confusing to me because the standard already is curb and gutter in most of the road. So I don't understand how we're raising it.
You know, I'm not speaking for the county, and so don't read too much into that, because what he said is that a county road, in his mind, is what this county road already is. So if your idea of standard is curb and gutter, you may be thinking of city roads as opposed to a county road that doesn't necessarily have curb and gutter.
But the road in Pleasant Grove already has curb and gutter.
But to that point, the county inherited a road that had curb and gutter. It was a state route.
So the state put the curb and gutters in.
Given the current situation, they own a road with curb and gutter that they have to maintain.
That's true.
So we're not asking them to raise the standard. It already is that standard. They happen to inherit a road of a higher standard than they're used to. Well, you agreed to take it on.
You have a valid point.
So I have a quick question. David, if you talk to Scott Darrington, is their council aware that Lee and Ivy are willing to discuss with us the option of taking the 9.5 and changing ownership later? Because I'm not understanding why Pleasant Grove would be opposed to that. It benefits them greatly to do that option as well.
In my discussion with Scott Darrington, his council is amenable to doing the agreement now as is, so they would take the funds that would be necessary to improve their portion up to the canal and make an agreement with the county just to do that for now, and then make an agreement with the county to maintain the road like is in the agreement in for the whole length clear to the mouth of the canyon.
But they wouldn't get the full $9.5 million if they do a separate agreement. So that's what I'm saying is I don't understand why they wouldn't be willing to wait a couple of months to talk with Lee and Ivy to see about getting it improved with the $9.5 million, which would be a better option for both cities than just doing their portion with a portion of the funds.
So there will be excess funds. And so really what Pleasant Grove is looking at is they're going to get everything they had asked for in the plan set with the funds that are there. Now, there will be excess funds that will be turned back to MAG, but Pleasant Grove looks at this and says, hey, we've got everything in the plans that we want, so we're moving forward. We're going to execute an agreement with the county and do that.
And is the county saying that they'll be willing to do a separate agreement?
Yes.
But it wouldn't include any MAG funds then?
Yes, it will.
But wouldn't they have to go back to MAG and ask for a separate project than what's already been approved?
No. They'll just eliminate a portion of it from the canal forward. They'll just eliminate sections of it, which will leave monies left over, which will be turned back to MAG.
And then at that point, any city can come and take it.
But isn't the MAG project for all of Canyon Road? But they can just say, we're just going to fix part of it instead?
I think they could reduce it quite easily, but I don't think they could expand it. I think expanding it would be the issue, but reducing it may not be an issue.
Any other questions on that? So if Cedar Hills doesn't do anything with the county, the money goes back to MAG, and then it'll be dispersed to other groups. Okay, Mr. Bailey.
The Arts Committee meeting, or committee, is holding their 1940s swing dance and dinner for couples. It's the 2nd of February. There's 6 tickets sold.
February?
December. We have about 26 left. So if you want them, let Greg know.
Buy them online.
Okay. Anything else, Ben?
Nope.
Okay. Mrs. Reese, do you have anything?
The Parks and Trails Committee met, and they are continuing to work on beautification plans for the roundabout. They've done some research on trees that can go through there, and they're continuing to work on that. Then we're having our annual Santa party here at the Rec Center on Monday, December 5th from 6 to 8. And it'll just be like it usually is, with hot cocoa and a treat of some sorts, and the YCC. And I think that's it. Did I miss anything, Chandler? You were there. Okay.
Okay. Mr. Graham Crowley.
North Point Solid Waste is going to meet next Monday for a special meeting to discuss their budget for next year. And that's all I have.
Thank you very much. That takes care of all of our city business. Let's move on to our first scheduled item, which is an action item on a resolution proclaiming November 14th through the 18th as Type 1 Diabetes Awareness Week. So, Mr. Bunker, I think you've got that.
Mayor and Council, we did receive a request from Miss Sydney Glass, who is a 14-year-old who has grown up with type 1 diabetes, and she is trying to bring awareness to the fact that there is a type 1 diabetes awareness week, and they would like the City of Cedar Hills to participate. And she says that in 2007, World Diabetes Day became an official United Nations Day. So it's worldwide. She's trying to bring attention to this and would like our city council to pass a resolution that November 14th through the 18th is as designated as Type 1 Diabetes Awareness Week in Cedar Hills, and pass that by resolution.
Okay. This is an action item. And if anyone has any comments, I'll take those now. If not, I will take a motion on it.
David, she's also asking that we light up this city building to be blue.
I'm not sure we're capable of doing that.
That's what I was going to ask.
We're not quite capable to do that. And so our proposal is that we would just pass the resolution making that week Type 1 Diabetes Awareness Week, but we were not proceeding forward with the other.
Okay, if there's no other questions, someone like to make a motion?
Sure, I will. Hang on. I move that we adopt resolution 11-01-A, a resolution of the City Council of the City of Cedar Hills, Utah, proclaiming November 14th through the 18th of 2016. That's Type 1 Diabetes Awareness Week in Cedar Hills.
Thank you very much. I have a motion on item number 8. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Sorry.
I think Mrs. Reese seconded it. Any further discussion?
Just on that resolution number 1101-2016A. Is that what you...
20. Yes. 2016A. Yes, I did say that.
Thank you.
Okay, very good for that correction. All right, let's have a vote. Do we need a roll call for resolution? Okay. Mr. Crawley?
Aye.
Mrs. Reese?
Aye.
Mr. Bailey?
Aye.
Mr. Geddes?
Aye.
Mr. Zappala?
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Let's move on to item number 9 now, which is also an action item. It's a bid award for the Bay Hill Park project. Mr. Bunker, why don't you proceed?
Mayor and Council, this is the second round of asking for bids from contractors for the Bay Hill Park. Bowen and Collins revised the bid plans and revised the way that the contractors would bid the project. Initially, they had it as a lump sum bid. They went ahead and separated it into a base bid and then some alternates. And the alternates are... alternate A was to upgrade the plants and shrubs to larger sizes of trees and shrubs. Alternate B was to provide and install a pavilion. Alternate C is to provide additional structural fill and install that fill. Alternate D was to install a gate at the trailhead. So we instructed Bowen and Collins to reach out to all of the companies that had previously bid any of their park projects that they've been working on. And they reached out, Jamie reached out to about 12 different companies. We actually had 10 people get plan sets, 10 different companies take plan sets to review. We still had the same two bidders submit qualified bids. One other bidder on the day that the bids were due was struggling to get their bid in, and finally at the end said they could not submit a price on time. And because it's a publicly open bid, there is no way for us to give them a different time than any of the other bidders. So they were non-responsive. So the two bidders again were SNL and Stratton Brott. Although this time they swapped places, Stratton Brott was the low bidder the first time. SNL came in a little bit lower this time. So their base bid, SNL's base bid, is $419,818.76. And alternate A, $28,801.98. Alternate B, $46,226.90. Alternate C, $8,071.50. And alternate D, $4,500. So based on these bids, Bowen and Collins is comfortable with SNL's base bid. In discussing the alternates with Bowen and Collins, it would be our recommendation that we don't award the alternates right now. Bowen and Collins did call SNL, and they said at any point during the process, if we want them to do an alternate, we can ask them to do the alternate at this price. So let me go through just a couple of issues here. Alternate A, when I spoke with Bowen and Collins, Jamie is confident that the plant schedule that's in the base bid will be a good set of plants and shrubs. We are irrigating the entire park. There's nowhere that's not irrigated. And so Jamie felt like with that irrigation system that will be installed as part of the base bid, that those plants will actually thrive and do just great. Now, we have had landscapers in the past that said when you upgrade your trees, they struggle more than the smaller trees to get established. And within a few years, they're actually the size of the upgraded tree. Now, I'm not an expert in that, but that's what we've had landscapers tell us.
So it's not more plants, it's just bigger plants.
Same plants, same plant schedule. Instead of a 5 gallon, we would get a 15 gallon.
Okay.
That kind of thing.
alternative was that?
That's alternate A.
Oh, okay.
So alternate A for $28,801 is to upgrade all the plants and shrubs a size.
Okay.
Jamie felt confident that because we're irrigating all the plants and shrubs, we have irrigation that will go to each one, that she's confident that we would be wise not to upgrade at that price.
In past parks, have we done upgrades on the plants?
We have in a couple, but in a couple we have not. So
which ones have we not? Do you know?
Temp Cove, we held back. We didn't upsize some of those. We did upsize, like in Sunset Park. I remember we did upsize those. I'm trying to think of Mesquite, if we upsized those trees. I can't remember. Some we have, some we haven't. When I talked to Wilkinson Outdoor Maintenance about this very issue on a previous park, his recommendation was not to upgrade. Let those smaller trees grow into their surroundings and their environment, and they do just as well.
I'm cheap. I always plant the smaller plants in my own yard.
Yeah.
And after a few years, they're doing great.
Yeah.
It takes a couple years. They're looking small the first year or two, but then they're thriving. Yeah.
Yeah. Alternate B is the pavilion. This one, I'm still wondering why that cost came in at $46,226. The mesquite pavilion that we did just a few years ago was actually larger in size than what is proposed on this plan set. The mesquite pavilion, I believe, is 34 by 44, and that pavilion cost the city $14,000. And so for this one to be...
It's interesting that they're both very... I mean, they must have got their sub-bid from the same bidder is what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's no reason why we couldn't hold that off and rebid that separately, is there?
No. And the thing is, that's going to be right towards the end. There's a lot of work to do before that gets done.
Does the pavilion include the slab? Do we pour the slab now? Or is the slab and pavilion all one thing, or do we pour the slab and then build it?
So the slab and then the pavilion will be in one bid.
So this is $46,000 for the slab and the pavilion.
Yeah, but everything up to the slab is included in the base bid. Okay. At any time, if we feel like, hey, we're not going to get a better price than the $46,000, SNL has said, you can always add this. We will always do it for the $46,000. The company that did our Mesquite Park pavilion, I reached out to them last week and asked them if they could take a look at this pavilion. They have not got back to me, but the fact that it's a larger pavilion than what we were proposing for Bay Hill, and it was $14,000 versus $46,000, I would like to explore if we could get that same company to tell us what a price. Now, we would have to go out and get bids for that. We can't just hand it to a previous contractor. We'll have to go get bids and solicit other contractors to give us a price.
That just seems, I mean, that seems a lot, like a lot of money for as simple as that pavilion is.
Just from
a builder standpoint.
So, but again, at any point we could pull the trigger and have SNL provide that pavilion at the $46,000. Alternate C, which is the additional fill. As I discussed this with Bowen and Collins, my question was the material that's out there to me appears to be adequate. I don't know that we need to import any additional structural fill. And our thought there was, as we prepare the site, we will take a soil sample. And if the soil sample comes back as a poor soil classification, then we will do the structural fill.
So it wasn't to raise any elevation, it was just...
Yes, okay. To make sure that we had the right structural fill underneath our roadway there. So if it comes back that we need it, then SNL is willing to do it at the $8,711. So we would just not do it if we don't need to. And then on alternate D, which is the gate, I put a call into the Salt Lake Metro Water Company. In the past, they have provided gates for us. They provided the gate that's down on Heisel's Hollow down there at the end of that road, and they did it on their dime. And so I would like to see if they would provide that gate or at least partner with us on that gate, because they need access to that corridor as well.
So would it be fenced off? The park would be fenced off, and that's why?
The park will not be fenced off. Just where the parking lot comes down and the trail leaves the north end of the parking lot and drops down onto
the
other trail, we would put a gate right there so that cars will automatically drive onto the trail.
Okay.
We want to limit the cars to stay in the parking lot and not drive up and down the trail.
So I'm trying to remember, because I see people drive through my property all the time on motorized vehicles, but I thought they're not really allowed on Bonneville Shoreline Trail, are they? Or are they?
So what you probably see is four-wheelers.
Yes.
And many of them. You might even see some Jeeps and things like that.
Yes.
Yeah, they're technically not supposed to be on that corridor. And so we're putting points of limited access along there. We're not encouraging people to drive their vehicles. And once we pave that trail, we actually post signs that say no motorized vehicles unless they're authorized. So this gate would limit people from just driving their car right onto the trail.
I just wasn't sure what Bonneville's policy was on there.
You know, there's certain parts of their pipeline that can handle a vehicle crossing it. And then there's other parts of their pipeline that the class of pipe is not strong enough to handle a load. And so they prefer not having vehicles cross their pipeline. So,
Mike, is your development trail still going up to Bay Hill Park?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I just comment on that question. The trail corridor itself is an open space. City rules no motorized vehicles on it. But the gates that we're discussing have been designed. They do have an open space. It's wide enough for a regular ATV four-wheeler to go through. Provide access for horses to get through because they are permitted on that. So there is access for four-wheel ATV.
But not a vehicle, not a full size.
Okay. I just wasn't sure because I see
they get up there.
Yeah, no, they do. Okay.
So. After discussing this with Bone and Collins, our proposal, our recommendation would be that we do award the base bid of the park to SNL Incorporated at $419,818.76, and that we go to that point at this time.
So my big question for the council is just getting a feel for the council's willingness, once we're farther along down in the project, closer to summer, to then allocate funds for the pavilion and playground equipment, because right now there really won't be any play areas for kids under the current setup. So that we would still have to add the pavilion and playground equipment to finish off this park.
And bathroom improvements.
And the bathroom improvements. Yeah. And so that's my question for the council is there going to be willingness then the summer to allocate funds to finish off this park?
How much are we talking about to finish it off? This budget year or funds from next budget year?
Either.
Well, all the money's already allocated for this year unless you take it from somewhere else.
Right.
How much was budgeted for this park in total?
I want to say 446. Yeah, total. We've had the design of the project, so those costs are.
Are bathrooms
the council,
a requirement?
The
like in
never,
order to open it,
it's not a requirement for a bathroom. But I would, you know, anytime you have a park where you're going to have a playground like that and a parking lot, it's tough on families that take their kids there and then have no facility, unless the neighbors want to open up their doors and.
Well, you'll just end up with boys using the park as the bathroom. But and the council never agreed to this, but I mean, we had also talked about the fact that, you know, as Cottonwood lots sold, that we would have more funds to use for projects such as these. And so that was just my question is, that's the question I'm going to get asked from the area is, when is the park itself actually going to be finished to where it's a park that kids can play at?
So that was my thought exactly, because we've sold two lots at
three
now that are closed.
The third one is closing, I think, at the end of this month. Yeah.
So I think there could be some additional funds that would kind of bridge the gap for next funding year, in my opinion. I'm in favor of it.
Okay.
So, you know what I was talked about, using the money from Cottonwood to pay down debt, in addition to St. Andrews Estates. So
I asked David about that because I had never heard that before.
I've not heard that the Cottonwood lots were required.
They're not required.
Okay. That was my understanding, that Cottonwood lots were not obligated.
So I just remember hearing almost from the day that I was a council member,
yes,
6 years ago, that that there was a goal and it's not a requirement. to use the money from Cottonwood and St. Andrews to pay down debt. But you guys can do what you want with it.
But we also learned from the golf committee that we can't really pay down debt.
No, there's parts of the debt, Charles, that are available to be paid early every year, is there not? And it doesn't have to, and so we have various debts, so it could be used anywhere. So I just remember hearing that we should use the money from Cottonwood to pay down debt. It didn't.
I didn't think it could pay the bond back.
Let's go back a little bit, because when I started, there was over $2 million in deficit, and so in the golf fund. So I know the money was going to be used to either pay down debt or bring down that deficit. Well, we used $2 million in capital projects fund that was unrestricted and paid that deficit down.
Right.
So I think it did fulfill one of those two. One of them was debt. I'm not aware that we can use any of it on the general obligation debt unless it's from St. Andrews. And I think St. Andrews has to be used towards the debt.
It does.
Now, can
I just add one thing here?
But the mayor makes a good point in that there are, even if there is money, there's always competing interests. So you just need to prioritize what, you know, whether it's that park or Deerfield or litigation or whatever it is, you gotta fund everything. So,
yep. So I want to add one thing here. I was here 8 years ago when the original decision was made on the Cottonwood lots, and it's actually nicely documented on our old forms. One of the nice things about it. And Jim Perry's ideas as a council member then was that they were reconfiguring St. Andrew's Estates in order to pay off some of the debt for the golf service, and then Cottonwood lots were meant to pay off the reconfiguration of the east side, the reconfiguration of the golf course. So,
which is part of the $2 million that we had.
This is reimbursing us for what we've already spent on
unrestricted funds
that we could then use on a park. Given that we could have otherwise used that money on the park, we had $2 million. We could have built Bay Hill 8 years ago, and the residents were requesting us to build Bay Hill 8 years ago. We said no, we're going to instead shift some money over and cover our losses on the golf course. So, for me, it's perfectly appropriate to use the
good.
That's
good
insight.
Yeah. I'll put my two cents in here too, and that is that besides utilities and things that are necessities, I think parks is the most legitimate expense a city can have, because it's used, by 90+% of the people use parks, and so it's one of the most legitimate sort of uses we can have, and I think these people have been waiting a long time, so I'm in favor of funding it through these funds.
Thank you.
Okay, someone like to make a motion?
I move that we approve or we award a contract for the construction of the 2016 Bay Hill Park project to SNL Inc. With the base bid price of $419,818.76.
Okay, I have a motion. Anybody want to second it?
I'll second it.
Okay, Mr. Crawley seconds it. Any further discussion? Let's have a vote. Mr. Crawley.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you very much. Let's move on to our next and last item, which is an action item on a bid award for the golf maintenance building. Go ahead, Mr. Brucker.
Mayor and Council, the city has received bids for the 2016 golf maintenance building. We did receive 6 qualified bids. I believe there were 17 contractors who received plan sets, and so we had 6 bidders. Big B Construction submitted the lowest base bid, and I wanted to review what the alternates were as well. This had a base bid with 2 alternates. Alternate number 1 is to remove the canvas tent that is down there, and instead of reconstructing that and getting a new cover for that, they would construct a steel building instead, and it would be smaller in size. And you should have a set of plans in front of you that show kind of that that configuration. So alternate two would be to remove the tent building, the canvas building, pave underneath that structure, and then reinstall the frame. It is a movable frame, and then the frame would be reinstalled, and then the city would have to contract with a separate firm who, it's a proprietary cover for this frame, and we would have to then get with a company called Vision Building Systems to come in and reinstall the cover, and that would be an additional $28,000 on top of the price that the contractor gave us. So on alternate number two, that does not include the cover. So the base bid for Big B was $317,760. The alternate number one is $78,100. That's the steel structure. Alternate number two is $32,203, but we would have to add about $28,000 to that in order to make that structure usable. As we sat down with Big B, again, these prices, we were hoping to get lower prices. We are always hoping to get lower prices. We asked Big B, is there anything in this project that we could value engineer, that we could reduce some cost? They were actually looking at, instead of having two separate buildings, combining those buildings just into one. But they have not got us a price back to do that. So our proposal is that we, at this time, we award to the low bidder, Big B, for their base bid and alternate number one. And then if they can combine those two steel structures, then that would be an additional savings to the city. Some of the key components why the city is needing to do this project at this time. As you know, most of you have seen the facility that's down there. It is definitely lacking in meeting code. I think there's issues down there with safety that we need to address for sure. And then also regulations for our stormwater have increased. We're continually upgrading our efforts and increasing what we do for stormwater regulations that have come down the pipe. And this project would help us get in compliance with those stormwater requirements. But safety and regulations are really the main drivers for doing this project. As you know, the site sits within the Highland City limits, and we have contacted Highland City. We have sent them a preliminary layout and a preliminary building design. They need the structural drawings before they'll approve the actual buildings. We can't give them those structural design until the project is awarded, because the low bidder would then go out and get the steel structure designed and get the structural calculations in order to submit them. But Highland's on board. We have a conditional use permit.
Are they going to charge us permit fees and things at all?
They were not going to charge any addition. There will be some kind of a charge there, which is the state... the state percentage on the building permit. So there will be a charge, but the
relatively
fees,
insignificant.
Yeah, the fees that go to Highland City themselves, it would waive, so. Which is nice of Highland. So trying to think if there's any, Jeff, do you have any additional comments there? Greg wanted to point out alternate number two, which is this canvas structure. It would be the 32.2 plus the 28 today, and then in about 10 years we will have to pay another 28. That structure, that canvas, it deteriorates over time. The other issue is it's not very secure. And so we've actually had people take razor blades and knives and actually cut that canvas and get into that facility. It is fenced. That whole site is fenced. But they jump the fence, get into that structure, and see if there's anything of value that they can take out of there. A steel building, we feel like we would have less of a problem with that.
So let me ask one other question that I was thinking about. Is there a residual value in that canvas? I mean, could we sell it on the open market for $10,000 or something to get something out of it?
So we looked the canvas itself. No, it's garbage, but the structure, the frame itself, the contractor said that there could be a reduction between, I want to say it was between $4,000 and $5,000, what I recall.
Was it $5,000?
$5,000. If we go with the steel building, the base bid, it would actually decrease by $5,000.
And then you would take that building as.
We would let someone else come and take that structure and get rid of it.
Because it seems like it would still be a fine storage facility for like a UDOT or something, or salt
services,
and you know, some temporary stuff like winterized, you know, things.
Or
like that.
Or even a greenhouse or somebody who does grows plants. And
there's
or
some value
like that.
To it.
Yeah, yeah. And so there would be a small salvage value there. Yeah, and we would save that on that bid. So
did you have something you were going to say something?
That's what I was going to say. $5,000 would be a reduction because they would not pay the erect this steel frame. They'd take it down and just set it to the side.
Yeah.
Then we would have that option.
Also, on top of that, we may actually be able to sell that for more if we find the right buyer. Possibly.
Yeah. So we could save a couple thousand off of this as a salvage value on that building. Charles wanted to make sure we point out that, you know, our bids came in higher than what was in the budget. And so, Charles, would you talk to how we would allocate our funding for this bid?
So originally it was budgeted $100,000 out of water and sewer and $200,000 out of capital projects. And based on the current bids with the option alternate one, it would require approximately $280,000 from capital projects and $120,000 from water and sewer. So you'd need to increase the capital projects by $80,000 and the water and sewer by $20,000.
So what we would do is we would bring back a budget amendment for both this and Bay Hill Park to make sure that our funding levels that are in the budget match what the bids are for these two projects, because the bids came in higher than.
So I wonder if Charles can explain that split, because you just said 100K, 200K was the original split. That's a 2-to-1 ratio.
On the base.
Why is the ratio now different with a higher?
Jeff and David went through the actual bid and said, hey, there's about $118,000 that's related to stormwater.
I see. So they looked at the actual
bid. We actually got that bid and said, okay, this one's related to
stormwater. Okay. So it wasn't just a proportional split?
No.
Okay.
It was what they bid on their
Right.
Whereas initially you just took an estimate set up about $100,200.
I see. Okay.
Exactly.
So the other question I had is, I heard you say, you're recommending we award the base bid. If we don't do alternate one, what happens to the equipment?
Base bid and alternate one.
Oh, base bid and alternate one is what you're recommending.
Yes.
We approve them both.
Yes. Okay. And then if the contractor can come back with a value engineering building that combines them into one, and we can save that money, if we can realize some savings there, then we would come back and say, hey, we're going to put them all together as one building.
And why would we not just wait until he comes back with that number for us?
Yeah, that's a good question. We could. My thoughts are we would still award to Big B as the low bidder, and then let him come back and see if they can save us the money. He may not be able to save enough. I don't know. He may not. The savings may not be substantial enough. So.
Is there a possibility of rebidding it as a combined facility?
There is that possibility. I don't know that.
I could just
I don't
have to talk about how much lower he was.
If you look at
Look how much higher. Well, he's 100 grand less than everybody else.
Yeah, he was substantially lower.
He's only 14K less than number three.
It's 40,000 now when you combine them.
If you have alternate one included in there,
23K less.
Yeah.
So, and I'm sorry, I may have missed it, but so it's about $100,000 approximately over what we budgeted.
It is about, yeah, $90,000.
But we have not determined yet where those funds would come from.
So what Charl was saying in his discussion is that we would pull some of it from the water sewer fund because it's stormwater related.
But we don't know how much.
And that was 120,
I missed that.
Did you say?
120?
120 from water.
Yeah, and the remainder from capital projects.
Yeah, so where does the extra 80K from capital projects come from?
So Charl, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. So at the end of last year,
I knew that there's two projects coming online, and we also knew that we were going to be over 25% in the general fund. So we transferred a hefty amount into capital projects, plus we just sold two properties. So when you look at everything that's planned in the capital projects fund, including the Heritage Park and the other projects that were in there,
Bay Hill Park,
When I saw the bids last Thursday, I went through and see how we could fund it, and I know there's going to be equipment, there's got to be a bathroom at Bay Hill and all this stuff. And so even if we took the unrestricted and said, hey, we're going to set aside enough for all the Bay Hill options and everything, and then do how this bid option one, I think we'd still have about 300,000 in unrestricted that could go to any future project.
So there's enough to complete Bay Hill Park, as we just discussed, and do this.
Yes.
And leave us, us entirely at all, is what you're saying.
Yes. Now, like Deerfield was to come online, it's just your priorities.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell you that's what you have to do. I'm saying the money's there.
Yeah. And how much did we transfer in at the end of the budget year? Do you remember?
I want to say 575 in total. So.
Are we close to being about that same amount again at the end of this fiscal year? I mean,
No, we wouldn't be able to do that every year. We were at 28% at the last year, and we got a compliance. This brought us down to 22.
But every year we've had some funds to transfer.
We've had some, but not that much.
Okay. My other question on this one, and I am not a builder, so I apologize for asking naive questions, but when I look at this building, it looks like the lunchroom is half the size of the workshop. Why is the lunchroom so big?
So that is also a training room, and that's where all the employees get together for their training and lunch. So in that, and the existing building is, it seems like it's inordinately large, but that's where the superintendent pulls everyone together in the morning, and they sit around the table and start divvying out assignments and doing training. So they need the ability to put all 20 employees in the same room at the same time. And so...
And they can't use the workshop for that?
Well,
generally speaking, there'll be
the workshop. You can't really say that workshop floor will be open, because if the mechanic has several machines down and he's got parts everywhere, it'd be kind of tough to put all 20 employees on top of that. But
can they instead use space elsewhere, like come up to the city building to meet?
Yeah,
that's where they begin in the morning. They park there and start. The other thing we're going to bring up is the reduction of the building to 402. So the storage space will actually probably be next to the
So the existing tent right now is 120 feet.
40 by 120. The proposal that you have is actually to shrink it to 50 by 40, so we're actually going to lose half of what the tent is. So to your point, why can't they use this, the store or the maintenance area? They're going to have to shrink down and really get their carts and everything down. Well, that's what I mean, because when the other equipment that we're going to shrink down that building, some of that equipment is probably going to have to be stored in there too, so it's going to be pretty tight, because we're really knocking down a lot of square footage in the building.
Well, and I was more asking, could they just come and meet at the city building?
Well, they park there in the morning, and then they literally start there and then take off with their equipment and everything. So if they start at the city building, then they're going to have to run down there. It's just wasted time.
Yeah, but
a lot of wasted time every day.
Cost savings? I mean, do they meet every single day?
Every day. Yeah, they get different assignments every day, whether it's greens, bunkers, fairways, whatever. Every day they do it, and then they do training.
Logistically, that doesn't really make sense. You don't want a bunch of these guys that come in, really, you know, to mow lawns and stuff, meeting in our conference room every day. I wouldn't.
And actually, that room is really, if you look at that size, it's, I mean, it appears.
The whole structure is only, what, 2,000 square feet?
Exactly. It's pretty small. I mean,
we're talking about minimal. They need a lunchroom somewhere where, you know, give them an extra.
And in that lunchroom, they have things like an eye wash, and they have protocol and instructions on the wall and things like that they need to see.
I just like to say, I think you did a really good job of keeping a very minimalist building. I mean, this is not Taj Mahal by any means. It's functional. I think it works. I think it provides the safety that we need to meet codes and things as far as chemicals and handling all that stuff. So I commend you guys. You know, I feel bad that it's a little bit over budget, but the original budget was a guess. I mean, you know, now we have a building, and that's what it is. I like value engineering. I think it could probably save some money by, we're going to lose two walls, so maybe we'll save some money.
How big is the public works building?
Oh, that one is quite a bit bigger. This one's 50 by 40. Our office space at the public works, do you have those numbers, Jeff?
Yeah.
Great.
Just to give you some comparison.
So the office is...
Oh, no, she's not talking office in this building. She's talking the public works building.
Okay.
So she's not talking this office
space. It's about 6,900 square feet total, bay and office at the public works building.
Okay.
This is about 4,000 for
this, is 2000.
This proposed building.
Yeah, this is 2,000. It's 50 by 40. So yeah, it's 2,000 square feet.
Total.
Yeah.
And then the city building over there is 6,900 square feet, but that includes our base over there. So it's, and we have a basement too over there.
And my comment on the lunchroom is really not a very large lunchroom. I think proportionately, but when you're looking at it,
it just looks like it.
The garage is very small. It's not like a mechanic's garage to fix motor vehicles. It's for lawnmowers and equipment.
That's the smaller workshop you're talking about?
Yeah.
Oh,
so
workshop.
It's not really a very large. It's got one small door, garage door. I think proportionately looking at it, it's like, oh, the lunchroom is as big as the garage.
Yeah.
The garage is really pretty small.
Okay.
So, and then that office also, our superintendent needs a location where he can pull the irrigation system. He needs a computer in there. Those kinds of things, and he needs to be able to lock that door and control what's in that office too. So they do a great job. We have probably one of the best superintendents in the state. He actually was president of the
GCSA, Golf Course Superintendent Association.
That Golf Course Superintendent Association in the state. He's highly qualified, so he needs a spot for that.
Any other questions from council?
I have some comments I'd like to make.
Go ahead, Mr. Crawley.
Okay. I've kept kind of quiet because I want to save my my rant to the end, but I do have a little bit of a rant. I'm not naive to the fact that there is a very poorly constructed building there that needs to be replaced. How it got there in the first place, I'm guessing, is that we didn't want to spend the necessary funds to build a building correctly, because of all the negativity around how much was already being spent on the golf course, and promises made that were not kept with the original golf course. And so we've lived with it not exactly ideal for years, and so I'm not naive to the fact that we need to do something, but I will probably vote no just in protest to how it came about, even though I understand that it needs to be fixed. And part of that stems back to, and you know, back in 2011 when I first did analysis of the golf course costs, the Daily Herald put out an article called Money Pit in Cedar Hills. And at that time, the money spent on the golf course was about $10 million. Since that time, it's risen to 12 to 13 million. Whether it's my numbers or the city's numbers, it's in that range and continues to go up. And this spending today is more in, you know, towards the golf course. It's adding around $400,000 to that cost, in addition to the debt that we have to pay off each year, and also the losses that we regularly incur from operations. And you know, we'll probably be in the $700,000 to $800,000 range that we'll lose this year on the golf course. And that's something that I'm speaking up just on behalf of those that are taxpayers that don't like seeing the money go out from the city for a golf course that they may or may not use. And that's something that you know, probably should have been calculated into the original cost of the golf course, these needs that we're having to spend now years later, so it continues to drain funds. It's not that we've spent the money way back when and we're you know, breaking even now. No, we can have to continue to spend funds on the golf course. And I didn't bring this up with the park because I didn't want to taint the discussion on the park during that discussion, but truly that expenditure is because of the golf course also. And it was the elephant in the room that I didn't want to mention during the park discussion, when we had the good people of Cedar Hills coming and speaking out against us for not building the park sooner. But the whole reason that park, there is no park for the people there, is because we use the funds that normally, and the area that normally would have gone to a park for the kids, instead for golf courses for the adults. And you know, kids play golf too, but that's not benefiting them like a park would in their neighborhood. We used all the extra land that we would have had for parks to build the golf course. We took all the impact fees that normally go for parks, and we put them into the golf course building here, or the pro shop, and now it's right, you know, the city building also. But no one dared mention that or thought of it. I don't know which. I didn't want to bring it up because of the good people that were there wanting a park, and appropriately so. But they said people have to play, and the kids have to play in the streets because they don't have a park there. And I don't know that the blame was going to the right place, which is overzealous people wanting a benefit to those that enjoy golf at the expense of the city in many ways, financially, playgrounds for kids, etc. So I understand that we need to spend this $800,000 plus on these two items, but they appropriately belong to the blame of the golf course and the original spending money on the golf course. And it translates to about $320 for the residents, each resident, what we're agreeing to spend today. And you and I, you know, five of us are deciding how to spend $320 of everyone else in this entire city's money. And it needs to be said that this is the reason why it's happening, and it's because of the golf course on both expenditures.
Anything else?
Nope.
Okay. All right. There's no further questions, then I will take a motion at this point.
I'll make the motion that we award a contract for the construction of the golf maintenance building to Big B for the approximate amount of $317,760.
It'd be $395,860 if you want to add one of the.
Is that what it adds up together?
Yeah.
$395,860?
Yeah, for the all.
Basically, including alt one.
Including alternative one. Oh, okay. Oops. Okay, let's do it this way. $317,760, including alternative. Oh, no. Whatever that number I just said, including alternative one, with the caveat that they work with our city staff and value engineer as best we can to see if we can save some additional funds by combining the buildings together and making them as one.
Okay, everyone got that motion? So, I have a motion. Is there a second?
Yeah, I'll second that.
Mr. Bailey seconds it. Any further discussion?
I'm still wondering, Mike, whether we want to wait and see what the value engineering comes in at before we approve.
You know, we did this with the on the board I sit on Utah Valley Dispatch.
Yeah.
And I think it really makes sense to take the low bidder and value engineer with the low bidder, is my personal opinion. But rather than open it back up, because now we would have to go spend money on engineering, redraw it, rebid it. I just think you've got qualified professionals that can sit down in a room and say, can we do this? So that's my opinion.
So how does that process work if we value engineer and they say, okay, here's a new plan for a building. Who does the engineering drawings? Who pays for
that?
Well,
after the fact, we would then pay for the engineering, I think, and the drawing.
So right now, in his cost, in the low bidder's cost, is the price to actually get those two separate buildings engineered and designed. So he has a cost built into that. So if we go back to him and say we want to look at value engineering, possibly put them back together, put those two buildings together, he would still pay for that. The contractor has that in his price.
I see.
And he would get the price from the steel building supplier. This is just the builder. He still has to get the steel building from a supplier. And so that supplier would then go and redo the building and redo the calculations for that. Big B would still pay for that.
And so who paid for these architectural renderings?
So these architectural renderings right here, the city had paid for. This is our architect that put together these plans so that it could go out to bid.
Okay. So the folks bidding saw this and said, here's how much it'll cost for us to build it. Yeah. Now we're saying we're going to have to come up with a new plan, and you're saying that the folks who we award the bid to would come up with that plan for us.
Yeah. They would come up with a plan to do one building, and they'd come back and say, okay, for us to put this into one building would cost X dollars. There's some asphalt over here that doesn't have to be done, but there's some asphalt over here. We have to move a drainage inlet or whatever they have to do on the plan set. And then the contractor would come back and say, after I make all these changes and I combine the buildings, your total savings would be X dollars if I do it that way.
And it might not be a savings.
And it may not be significant. It may not be that much.
And maybe it's more, but at that point you just... We're hoping
there would be some savings.
Yes. Yeah, I mean,
if it turned out to be the same either way, do you prefer it being in one building as opposed to two separate buildings?
I think so. I think if we could have it as one building, it might be better for the, you know, the maintenance crews, better for Austin, the mechanic. Then that way it's all in the same building. He can just move equipment within that building to work on. But, you know... The separate building out there doesn't have insulation. It doesn't have it's very limited electrical. It literally is just a storage shell.
It's
not comfortable.
So the bulk of the bids that they gave us are for the actual building.
Yeah. So if we combine them, all of a sudden now there's requirements. Okay, you have to insulate the whole thing.
Yeah,
you have to ventilate the whole thing.
So it may actually increase the cost.
Right. So it's not a given that it's gonna, you know. Just eliminate two walls, and then that's the price.
Right.
You remember that building used to be up here.
Yes, I do remember.
Yeah.
Okay, any more questions from Mike?
Yeah.
Are you going to...
I just...
Hold on a sec. So he was trying to nudge you to change your motion back.
I'm not.
But
no.
You're not, right? And so
I wasn't trying to nudge him at all.
Mrs. Reese, do you have any questions?
No questions. Just on the discussion portion, I just wanted to acknowledge what Councilmember Crawley said. I mean, I can appreciate
the sentiment that he's expressing, which is that there are quite a few people in the city who are upset with the amount of money that the golf course costs, and adding more to that is frustrating for many. And so I do want to acknowledge that is the case. But also acknowledge that there are some significant safety concerns for our staff members. There are some regulation concerns with EPA and DEQ that we have to make sure that we're addressing. And if we didn't have those safety and those regulatory concerns, then I wouldn't want to build this building because there is so much controversy about the golf course. But I just don't think at this point we have a choice.
Okay, thank you. I have a motion. And did someone second the motion? I think we did, didn't we?
Yes.
So, if there's no further discussion, let's have a vote starting with Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Okay. Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Crowley.
Nay.
Okay. Motion passed 4-1. And so that is our meeting. I'll take a motion to adjourn.
I'll move that we adjourn.
Okay. I have a motion to adjourn. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Cubs are up 7-2. Go Cubs.